Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Gabriel Kahane's 8980 Book of Travelers is a new collection of songs inspired by the two-week train trip he took across the United States last November. He left on his unplugged journey the day after the 2016 election to meet and converse with dozens of strangers.
A long gray silence had ambled down the coast. You drew in sand all the things we'd miss the most. Little love, little love. Little love, little love. Little love, little love. I hope we die here when we're old.
Created in collaboration with director Daniel Fish and designer Jim Finley, 8980 Book of Travelers is a song cycle and solo stage show that will officially premiere at the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Next Wave Festival later this fall. Tonight, in a kind of sneak peek, Kahane will take the stage at the Hunter Center at Mass MoCA, where he's been working on the piece in residency for about 2 weeks. He joins us now to tell us more. Gabriel Kahane, welcome back to the Roundtable.
It's great to be here.
Tell us, to start, about how you came up with the idea to go away on train for a number of days and weeks, and how much planning went into it before you left.
I had been working for, 8 months or maybe even a year on an album that was sort of more generally about travel and the history of travel and looking at the evolution of travel from being a religious activity in the form of pilgrimages and then on to a mode of edification in the 18th century with the sort of grand tour in Europe where young men would go off and travel as a means of educating themselves. And then with the Industrial Revolution, there was this idea of planned leisure, and with big business owners realizing that their workers would be more productive if they gave them time off. And so that led to the advent of the vacation. And then in this country, in the early part of the 20th century, and particularly around the New Deal and the sort of development of national parks, there was almost a kind of revitalization of this idea of travel as religion, that where the sort of spiritual element of being in national parks was like really written into the rhetoric around tourism. And all of this sort of grew out of my touring over the last years, 2014, 2015, and into 2016. Until then, because of my sort of oddball career of jumping between the classical music world and the theater world and my songwriting life, I'd never really done a proper tour cycle until The Ambassador, which came out in 2014. That was the first album, even though it was my third release as a solo artist. It was the first time that I kind of did the whole touring thing. And there's sort of a truism in the pop music world that, you know, the sophomore album is always about touring. And in this case, it will be my fourth album. And, you know, this piece represents my sort of belated travel, you know, musician travel record. So that's all sort of preamble to early October, when I had this idea that in order to finish this record, I needed to take a trip. And I was interested in sort of framing the album with a specific journey. And there I was sort of inspired by the model of the German writer W.G. Sebald, who wrote three or four of these magnificent and kind of difficult to characterize books that are sort of framed as travel writing, but then feel at times novelistic, at times historical, personal, so on and so forth. And so I thought maybe I would take a trip that could serve as kind of the frame for this piece. And this was also, of course, in the lead up to the presidential election. And living in New York, I was pretty cloistered and wanted to have a deeper sense of what had led to this huge rift, cultural rift, political rift, societal rift. And so I think it was maybe the second or third week of October when I bought the series of train tickets to leave the morning after the election and to do about 9,000 miles around the country. and I was going to do this regardless of the outcome of the election. So that's how it came to pass.
You traveled without your phone, without the internet. You didn't even bring your phone, or did you bring it but leave it off unless you needed it in an emergency?
I did not bring my phone, which was really exhilarating. The other thing, I forgot to mention, is that I ended up throwing away basically the entire album I'd written before the trip and started over, which is part of the reason that this week up at Mass Mocha has been a little bit hectic, because I'm still writing every morning, even as we start teching the piece. But yeah, I wanted to have, I think partly, probably on a subconscious level, I wanted a break from the constant political chatter, and I had been reading the news obsessively, reading about the polls obsessively, and I think I was just really interested in talking to people and not having any kind of mediation. It was pretty transformative. Yeah, I would say that I feel like I was fundamentally changed by the trip.
In what ways?
Being outside of the digital space, I was able to experience social and cultural difference, I think, in a different way. I think that there's a kind of echo chamber effect that a lot of us have experienced and that has been written about quite a lot in social media, the sort of shaming, the pile-on tendency, and also, I think, realizing that difference is sort of manipulated and augmented for the purpose of profit, which is to say that, I mean, and this is, I think, you know, a very old tradition that goes back to pre-modern or early modern times when you had, you know, newspapers associated with a political party. But I think that some of the kind of hallmarky kumbaya sentiments, espoused by Obama, things like we have more in common than we have that divides us, I think fundamentally that's actually true. And obviously we have now a media system that I think plays to our worst instincts. And I think, you know, while I personally find it to be more toxic, from, you know, coming out of the sort of Fox News, Breitbart, InfoWars sphere, I think there's also a kind of cultural shaming that happens on the left, which I would not propose as a sort of moral equivalent. But I do think that really, really well-intentioned progressives have participated in a kind of culture shaming for years. And I think that you know, that has played a role in dividing us. And a lot of what I experienced on the train, in the absence of media, in the absence of mediation by technology, was being able to sit with people whose politics, you know, I often found objectionable. And yet, I think I was able to really find empathy for people. Just about everyone I encountered on the train was there for some reason having to do with family. And there were people who were making huge sacrifices for family, people who espoused tremendous sense of loyalty to their family, who were, you know, a husband and wife alternating, traveling 1,500 miles on the train to go be with their daughter who had been, you know, left by her husband. And this doesn't excuse morally compromised political positions. But I think the other thing that I feel like in this political moment that we're in, because of technological moment in which we are so fiercely guided by the idea of efficiency, that I think one of the unintended consequences of being so married to this idea of efficiency is that there are certain categories of experience that get sacrificed. And one of those categories of experience, I think, that gets sacrificed is the ability to empathize. So, for example, when I think about people who do have, say, active racial animus, as opposed to the passive racism that, you know, I think is really woven into this last election. I feel like there's not enough, to me, there's not enough compassion in asking, well, how did these folks become vulnerable to these kinds of ideas? Because they obviously were not born that way. And I think it's only when we're able to sort of look at the underlying root of prejudice that I think we can heal. Whereas I feel like our tendency in the digital space is just to point at things and shame them. Often, you know, for you know, the sort of what I would argue is the correct moral position. But I think it's rare that shaming leads to change as opposed to education and illumination and so on and so forth. So I guess that's a very, very long-winded way of saying that. I think that stepping outside of the sort of anonymity of the digital space, where it's very easy to sort of throw shade from afar, I was able to engage with people who had cast, you know, what I believed to be a really destructive vote for our democracy and experience their humanity, and I think they were able to experience my humanity. But then also I would just say, returning to this thing about efficiency, I think the other way in which the trip really changed me was just in thinking about time and the way in which the train is, in one sense, this incredibly inefficient means of transportation. It takes 4 days to get across the country, whereas we could fly in 5 hours. And yet, again, there are these categories of experience that I think are made possible on the train by virtue of its inefficiency. I think that people are just more social on the train. You also are traveling slowly enough that I think the natural beauty that you're encountering, I think you're able to experience more deeply, or at least I was able to experience it more deeply and sort of let all of that in. Whereas I find, you know, flying as I often do, you're at such a distance and there is such a sense of enormity that you don't really have an entry point for an emotional reaction or an emotional experience. And so I guess I feel like the train revealed these ways of experiencing people and experiencing beauty and experiencing the country that feel in a way kind of antithetical to our digital lives.
When last we spoke, I sang of end times, of cities washed away, the bloodless halls, a flooded station, and that last train from LA. With 3 years have passed and here I am in the waiting room, delayed with all the restless. Some 60 eyes fixed hard and fast on the TV playing something senseless. Me, I dream of a broken watch with hands like vines.
The first public performance of Gabriel Kahane's 8980 Book of Travelers will take place at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts tonight. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.